Well, folks, it's my great pleasure to once again welcome into the studio Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Good to be here.
And also on the phone, two people, Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
Hi, Mike.
And also Zaz Hollander on the other phone. Welcome, Zaz.
Howdy. Howdy,
Hi.
Everybody.
Okay, now we can all hear one another. Well, today is one of those days, it's like post-hurricane. 50-mile-per-hour winds earlier the week in Palmer, all kinds of strange stuff. And today, as we're doing this on Friday, there is no wind. It's zero. It's stopped.
For now.
And I'm just wondering whether this is some kind of metaphor for activities that are occurring elsewhere in the world, whether it's in Washington, D.C. or Juneau, or for that matter, here in the Valley. Since I mentioned the Valley last, let's begin with that. Tuesday of this week was a beautiful day with a couple of meetings, one a joint meeting with the Assembly and the School Board, and a second one following right after, a regular Assembly meeting. And extracting out of that the centerpiece, I think, of what the discussion was about, that drew somewhere in the neighborhood of 80 people to talk about trapping. And the end result of that meeting was a 6-1 vote with some changed guidelines in the ordinance governing trapping, particularly in areas that involve trails. But Wednesday dawned, and what happens? Oz, do you have a sense of that?
I do have a sense of that. So Wednesday dawned, and I think it was at 7:30 in the morning, Assemblymember Randall Kowalki notified the clerk that he was asking for a reconsideration of the vote. And what Assemblymember Kowalki said in an interview is that he didn't do that as some, at least this is what he said, he didn't do that as some have implied because he was pressured by the Trappers Association, that he wanted to give trappers a chance to come to another public meeting since there really weren't, from what I hear, I listened remotely, but I heard that there weren't a large number of people representing the trapping community there. What he said he was doing was trying to clean up the ordinance. It was not the Assembly's finest policymaking evening. There were Assemblymember Doty had an amendment that I believe she had sketched out ahead of time, and that the attorney had kind of tried to fit into the proposed ordinance. But then there were a number of other amendments that were new to him, and so there was this kind of mad scramble to try to see how this would work legally. It turns out, it sounds like, at least two of the areas proposed for a trapping ban, which has to cover borough-owned recreational land. It's questionable whether the borough has authority over lands in those areas, Reflections Lake and Matanuska Lake. This may have changed by now. It was kind of an evolving situation when I talked with the community development director. And so Assemblymember Kowalki wanted to a map. He wanted to clean up the language. He wanted to resolve if there were issues with those two areas, which he didn't know about when he requested a reconsideration. He found out about that a few hours later. But he also wanted to maybe add a couple areas in Willow and Trapper Creek. So pretty cobbled together for such a high-interest piece of legislation. It was, I don't know, surprisingly cobbled together at sort of the last minute.
Terry,
and
comment.
So they will take this up again on March 23rd.
Right. And Terry?
Yeah, so Zaz outlined it pretty good. It's what they call we refer to lawmakers making sausage at the table. And a lot of it was that, you know, they're a couple of things here. I kind of take a little bit of issue that Kowalki hadn't heard from trappers. Maybe not at that meeting, but at the previous meeting during public open testimony, there were quite a few trappers there. And it's just that the community that really supported this ban all showed up at once, and there were only a few people. But it should be noted the trappers in the audience were pretty okay with the ordinance. So that part I sort of have to push off a little bit. But he was right about it being messy, and so was Oz. It was, you know, part of it has to do with the Open Meeting Act, which does not apply to state lawmakers, but does apply to the Assembly, and that they can only talk to two members of the Assembly prior to a meeting that is not public to protect the public, which I'm okay with. But it sometimes makes things a little messy because they don't get, he perhaps did not approach the right people. The maker of the ordinance, Mayfield, on who had the most trails and really had the most to lose. So, had a dog in the battle, so to speak. So I think part of it was a lack of homework on the part of the assembly, and also just the fact that it's just really hard to do that when you've got 80 people sitting in front of you, that have a good argument, and you just aren't fully prepared to do it. Now, what he could have done, anybody could have done, is when they saw it getting messy, was they could have kicked it down the road another meeting, but then they'd already kicked it down the road. They'd already used that option on a previous meeting. So they were kind of up against, I think, thinking they had to pass something, and nope, it wasn't pretty.
Yeah. Mark, does anybody expect a different outcome on reconsideration?
Kowalki doesn't. He said with a 6-1 vote, he'd be surprised. I mean, if you kind of look at the makeup of the assembly right now, if indeed he does continue to not only support the legislation, but wants to make it a little bit more restrictive with a couple other areas. Maybe McKee, but he was voting, very straightforwardly, it seemed like. I'm wrong. I didn't hear a lot from him.
But correct me if I'm wrong, Zaz, they public testimony is closed on it. Will they have public testimony on the reconsideration?
I don't remember the rules on reconsideration. That's a good question.
Yeah, well, because I think you'll probably see a whole bunch more people show up on the 21st.
And, of course, they can speak at other times,
yeah,
depending
on
audience
participation.
Right. And just an observation, having been there and watched this, I was struck by two things. One was what I considered to be an omission, and two, what I considered to be an excess. The omission was the omission for those people in the audience, and I believe also for the assembly, of some of that great information that's available graphically from the borough's GIS department that would show everything from where these trails are, the pieces you're speaking about, who owns the land beneath it, who's in control of it, et cetera. And I'm going to guess that at this March 21st meeting, there will be a lot of that available, so that when people think about it or are talking about it, they will have all the information. The excess that I noted was once that process of amending started, people were talking a long time about the amendments. In the first case of just describing the amendment, and whenever that happens, I become very wary because these were not simple. And it looked like people who were making the amendments had to be very careful and were really talking a lot about what their amendment was. And I looked at the faces of the assembly and I said, I'm not sure they're picking up all of this nuance as well.
Well, I think part of it is that there's a lack of understanding on what you can and can't do on land that you manage for the state, basically, because that's where the title ends up, isn't that correct, Zaz? And what powers you have in there, is that part of the problem?
I don't know.
Because Government Peak came up a little bit, and it was shot down right away by saying, they had a lease on that land. It's really not. They manage it.
Yeah,
the recreational area.
And I think it's kind of a checkerboard with state and borough and,
Well, and you also had that point made quite clearly by one of the animal control officers, because when we start talking about an ordinance of this sort, the question comes up, is there any fiscal note and cost associated? And the point was made that the people who would normally be in charge of monitoring this were already stretched very thin. There was a question of enforcement, a question, and I think that drove some of the amendments, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
So, look.
It'll also be interesting. There is a HB 40 out there that Representative Josephson has in this the state pot of stew going on in Juneau. It'll be interesting if this does go through, and there'll probably be more publicity now that it's being recalled again, if they will actually take that up. Have you heard anything about that, Zaz?
I haven't heard anything on it lately. It'd be tough getting the votes in that committee, but who knows?
Right, Mark?
Before we move on, I've got a quick question.
the folks who testified, was there a common theme or a common idea that brought them all to the assembly meeting?
What do you think, Terry?
Well, I mean, they had a petition of, what was it, Zaz, 3,500 signatures.
Yeah, more than 3,500.
Yeah, and it was, I think what was a difference for me, a kind of a nuance that I picked up when I was thinking about it driving home, is how much the Valley is changing with a different culture of people coming in here. That there were several people that testified that were fairly new to the Valley, sort of younger individuals, family, you know, age people that had come, and they were now their recreation. They weren't talking so much of hunting and trapping at all, but they were talking about, you know, biking and skiing and using the trails for, mobility and things like that. And it's just a completely different thing than those voices have been kind of quiet as opposed to the other voices. And now we're starting to see a different voice. And I wonder if that's sort of connected to our growth in healthcare here, and that more people, paraprofessionals are coming in, nurses, doctors, that sort of thing. They didn't identify what they did, but it sure sounded like there was a lot of new voices out there that I hadn't heard from that were new to the community. So I thought that was interesting.
And I could say that my observation from the start was, as the first couple of people started speaking, I realized, one, it was a general high quality in what they were saying. They were speaking clearly. They made not the same point. It wasn't a Me Too type of echo.
Yes.
I was listening carefully because we had physicians, architects, veterinarians, users of the trails, all kinds of people giving a wide variety of perspectives, and I thought I learned a lot at that time. I also wanted to say, and this underlines what I think Terry mentioned earlier, that the representatives from the Trapping Association that spoke, there were two in particular, spoke very clearly, and they admitted that they appeared to be in a minority in the room, but they were not confrontational. They, if anything, were saying it's to everyone's interest to make this work some way. I think my feeling about what's going to happen on the 21st is really the question, if there's agreement on the general idea of doing an ordinance, what the details are about what gets included is going to determine what that vote's going to be. So let us segue then from this piece of legislation. Let's work our way up, and we'll go to Juneau. What struck me recently was a very interesting article that described Tammy Wilson's activities in a committee where she was doing her work. Now that she is no longer a chair of a committee, she was able to spend her time producing amendments, and well over 200 amendments were being provided to consider in terms of the budget process. Any comment about that, Terry?
Oh, I think you must be referring to Dermot Cole's article in the ADN today, which was really quite good. I've listened to quite a bit of the House Finance and committee hearings, and it was pretty clear that she had an agenda there for the entire minority caucus. That it really was a time-consuming, arduous thing watching all those amendments be introduced, and many of them, as I think Dermot has pointed out, just didn't save any money at all. They were just for show. And I think with the 90 days in the session, I would be a little disappointed if I was her constituent that she'd introduced so many things that clearly were not going to get support at the table. There was no consensus on them. They were just for show. And I also want to know where her support is for smoke-free workplace bill that she has staunchly been against, that saved $500,000 off the Medicaid budget. So, to me, I was just not surprised, but I think people should read that article.
I agree. I was a little bit dumbfounded by the whole thing. I couldn't help but thinking, here is the perfect encapsulation of the idea that's still way too prevalent out there, that just cut. And I think Terry made some good points about some of the line items that just would not save any cash. But I think of at least the same concern is some of the other ones that were not based in, they didn't seem to take into account what the effect would be. And that really is scary to me that, well, it falls to voters for sure to make sure that they know who they're electing and what that person's, you know, worldview is, because she really seemed to me to be completely or at least profoundly ignorant of how government works and how a dollar spent here affects things down the road. So that really seemed to me to be the biggest concern. And yeah, big time on the waste of time.
Yeah, and yet she does not point out some things that are pretty, if you listen to the Senate calendar and who's going to be gone, I know at least one Massachusetts senator is making his third trip in a row home on the weekend this weekend. And for a 90-day session, yeah, I know they don't, maybe they don't work all weekends. Maybe they should if they're going to go over 90 sure. days weekends, but no questioning those kind of things.
Okay. Well, so let us then wend our way up the ladder to Washington, D.C., where there seems to be a discovery of a high-speed highway to process some significant changes to healthcare legislation. And as I've noted, seems to be the interesting aspect, when asked, very often the people proposing some of the changes are not able to answer what the dollar figures associated with the change are going to be. And in fact, there's some suggestion that there has already begun a process before the numbers come out of undermining the OMB, Office of Management and Budget's projections when they have a chance to look at the legislation and run the numbers. I guess what I'm hearing is, although they're being done in two different ways, that both in Juneau and at the national level, there seems to be a unwillingness to look at real figures in terms of dollar costs for any particular piece of legislation. Mark, how about you? Any comment about that?
Oh, well, I think it's very telling that nobody wants their name on it. The Democrats seem to be bending over backwards to brand it Trump care, while the Republicans don't really seem to have any interest in calling it Trump care, Ryan care. They don't seem to really want to have a name attached to it, and that, to me, says everything.
Okay, Terry.
Good point. Well, yeah, I think who knows what's going to happen. I mean, everybody's ultimately has their eye on the next election cycle. The Republicans don't want any blood on their hands for that. The Democrats don't want to give an inch because they've been beat to death on this thing for 8 years, and there are some open wounds there. So will the American people win in this? I don't know. But who really has something at stake is the state of Alaska, because we lose big time, especially on the voucher system for Medicaid. And I think Lisa Murkowski's already come out pretty strongly against that, but we're the state it works the least for all of these changes. I think we're going to see kind of what we did with the killing the 60-some votes they took in the House against Obamacare. I think they're going to spit something up, and then I think the adults in the Senate are going to really have to tackle it and worry about how it affects the next election.
So my understanding, since you've mentioned Senator Murkowski, that both Senators Murkowski and Sullivan were granted an audience and spent at least an hour with the president, which is pretty special. And as been reported in a number of ways, Senator Murkowski brought maps and graphics that would describe the points that they were making, some of which you have alluded to there, Terry, that Alaska stands to be dramatically impacted by a number of the suggested proposals, whether it's health care or other aspects of what may be, it's still a little fuzzy, the agenda that the new administration is proposing. Comments?
Yeah, well, I say kudos to Senator Murkowski for bringing visuals and bringing them in maps instead of data, which I think may be easier for this administration to understand. But I think she totally did her homework. It sounded like the briefing that I got. And, you know, we'll see if anything, her presentation was seems like it was a little bit in together with what Sullivan was, but it sounds like what she had to present was much more impactful. Now, whether that it's a new shiny object, Alaska is something that I think Trump probably has not paid much attention to. So who knows? Maybe it'll get some attention because of that. But she's working it, that's for sure. Mark probably has a better comment.
No, he's shaking his head.
No, that's a pretty good summation right there.
And, of course, along the way, there was mention of something that we have to, since we have a Alaska-Trump connection, that one of the president's ancestors built a hotel in Alaska back in the day. Zaz, do you have any further information about that?
Oh, geez, that was Dermot Cole wrote about that, but that was a little while back. I don't have the details fresh at hand.
Yeah, something on the order of 110 years ago or thereabouts, but long time ago. But that's not in this world today. Those little pieces of connection seem to provide a weighty effect often. So we'll see how that plays out and whether, for example, perhaps the president will consider building another hotel here in Alaska. Well, beyond the weather, what we are witnessing here, of course, is the drama of the Iditarod. And we've been reporting on that each morning. It was less visible here in the valley because after the ceremonial start in Anchorage, of course, it moved up to Fairbanks, where very cold temperatures there, 30 below zero or better, have accompanied the racers as they've started out. And Mitch Seavey, in my last report, had gone into Huzlia and was out, and he was in the lead. Of course, he had not taken his 24-hour layover, so there were still opportunities for others. What is
including his son, who is moving along at a very fast pace. He's definitely in the mix.
And he has taken his 24 hours. So even though it looks like he's behind, it's one of those deals. The weather seems to be looking better. My question for you, having just brought that up at the moment, is what's your sense about the Iditarod as an event? You've all had an opportunity to witness it for many years. How has it been evolving, or where do you think it stands against other sporting events and or the major news that's happening around the world? Think people are paying attention to the Iditarod?
I think it's still a niche event. I think that there are people, especially outside, who have that, oh, wow, how cool thing, but it does not fit into the, you know, big stories of the day, certainly. I think over the years, one thing I've seen clearly is great effort to, you know, beef up the public relations, especially with regard to animal care. You know, how the public is educated about how the dogs are raised and bred and all that. There was a time not too long ago, certainly back into the 90s, where there was a lot of talk of, oh, you know, it's cruel, it's bad for dogs, we should do away with it. I remember in the mid-90s, as a sports reporter, hearing people talk about, oh, in 5 years, it's only going to be the Iron Dog, this dog race is going to go away. And that, of course, has not happened. I would say it's probably stronger than ever, although clearly a different race now.
Okay. Zaz, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think Mark is on target. It's outside Alaska, it's a novelty event, and maybe you'll see a story about it before it starts, but there's not this kind of constant coverage that we get in-state. And I think that, you know, a lot of us and a number of mushers feel as if they're big stars here, but their names are completely unfamiliar to most other people around the country. Here in Alaska, though, I mean, the race has changed tremendously, you know, with big sponsorships, lots of corporate names. You know, the race has gotten faster. There's been all kinds of technology brought in. But there's also, this year anyway, there's been fresh attention because there was that documentary, remember the one that debuted in Canada, Sled Dogs, that Well, most mushers, certainly the one involved, would say kind of ambushed a rookie musher and put him at the center of a film that tried to document the abuse associated with professional, dog mushing. And so I think the race was probably and is probably very wary of negative attention. And unfortunately, there was a dog death overnight, a 2-year-old dog, in kind of a middle-of-the-pack team died. And so that's beyond being, obviously an unfortunate event in itself. It's the kind of thing that the race is hoping to avoid. I do have to say that, and I haven't written the story, so I shouldn't talk, but I think there is a lack of hard-nosed reporting on, the habits that this kind of, professional distance mushing, there is a downside to it. And I think sometimes we gloss over that. I don't think that most, certainly not these top mushers, are in any way cruel to their dogs. But there's been, historically documented culling, killing dogs that don't and that don't meet your standards. And I think there is still, I've talked to, Husky Rescue advocates who say that they don't see all of the kind of senior dogs adopted out or puppies even because there are some mushers, and I think this is current, and there's no names. I have no evidence of this. This is all anecdotal, but they don't want to let a bad bloodline continue. And we don't write about that stuff. Nobody talks about that stuff. So I think that there is a darker, maybe it's a real small side, but then, there is a darker side. And then, you have mushers like David Straub, who was convicted on, misdemeanor charges or maybe even a violation for animal cruelty for having so many dogs he couldn't even take care of at his Willow place. And he now is opening a marijuana cultivation facility.
Right. Terry, any comments?
That could be all part of even a bigger party about dog breeding altogether, because that culling goes on with breeding overall, but maybe not, at the time or the way it's done. So I think it would make a great story overall about dog breeding. I've got a couple of rescues that are came from conditions clearly from a puppy mill and are suffering lifelong problems from it. That they didn't call them out. It's a subject that really should take some attention, puppy mills included.
Okay. Well, with that, we have come to the end of another edition of Valley Edition. And I want to thank Mark Kelsey for coming all the way down to the studio. Thank you.
My pleasure, Mike. See you all next week.
Right. And I want to thank Terry Snyder. Thank you for calling in, Terry.
Yay for technology.
Right.
Have a
good
week.
And thank you, Zaz, for also calling in. Take care.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.
Right. We'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.